Welcome back to the Chain Gang Podcast. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest, all the way from the other side of the Atlantic. It's Maggie Coles Lister. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm surviving. I'm hot. I'm tired. I'm always tired. I mean, for you, it's the start of the day. You've got a whole day ahead of you. I'm done with it now.
I feel like I've been up for hours. I had a 6:30 yoga class.
I don't remember.
No, that. my day's like half over. We're almost at nap time, bro.
Oh, there we go. You're living the continental lifestyle. You're born to be a cyclist.
Athlete life.
Yeah, exactly. See, I used to be able to nap really well when I was living at university, but now I've come home, people interact with me when I'm trying to sleep, and it's not the best at all. I can't be dealing with that. I just want to sleep.
I feel you too. I have two younger sisters.
Yeah, see, that's where it all goes wrong. So, anyway, how are you doing in lockdown? How are you training? How are you keeping fit? How are you keeping up with cycling?
Yeah, good. So, when this all started, I was down in California, and, could still train outside, and everything was all good and nice weather, and then Canada stopped insuring non-essential travelers, so I had to, get the F out of there real quick, because you don't want something to happen in the States with no insurance. So I came home. And I'm just 2 days away from finishing my 14-day quarantine, but I was still allowed to go out and exercise. So it's been riding and some running and just kind of a mixture of what keeps me happy. Yoga, lots of yoga, lots of standing on my hands. It's my passion.
So I can't.
The world looks great upside down. Sorry?
I cannot relate at all to that.
I'll have to teach you.
Yeah, there we are. There'll be a new video for the Chain Gang, amongst all the other strange videos I make, challenging British Cycling Academy riders to track sprints. It's never going to end well for me. So, in lockdown, have you found that you're kind of almost, because you've got the time, have you found things you would find yourself doing things you wouldn't normally be doing? So there are a lot of riders I've spoken to who have either started new hobbies or they've spent more time socialising with friends, obviously socially distance or through it online, or they spend a lot of time kind of just doing what they love, which they haven't had the chance to do as professional athletes when your life is all full on and you're traveling all the time.
I mean, to be completely honest, this kind of feels like just when I'm home during the summer or during the winter and just have some time between racing, because my life, most of my training, unless we have team camps, is done alone. And besides not being able to go to the gym, I'm still studying and just, you know, makes my life seem real sad. But most of my life happens here when I'm home. So, I haven't noticed a big difference for me personally. I definitely have noticed I've actually probably connected more with friends, because those few times I would go out and usually see them, that doesn't happen. So lots of Skype and phone calls. I miss hugging people. I'm a big hugger. Sad, but yeah, hopefully new normal will happen soon.
And you'll go on a massive hugging spree. That's it.
Yeah, just hug everything. Hug all the dogs, hug all the people.
The person behind the checkout at the supermarket. No one's safe. No one. In terms of, obviously, like you said, when you're home for summer, being a cyclist, the way cycling works has always been European-centric. And obviously, Americans and North Americans in general have broken the cycling circuit a few times, mainly from the US, Greg LeMond. Obviously, you had Lance and the US got cycling fever and it was kind of illegitimate, but the fever was still there. How do you find being in a sport that has most of its main events away from the continent where you live?
It's definitely hard and definitely takes a lot of creativity to find out how to actually race, and not even that, just learn how to race your bike, because if you plan to go to world championships or any big events, you're going to be racing against Europeans who have had all these, mostly they had these big events they've been doing since they were really young, and it's just such a different style of racing. I'd say it's more aggressive, faster. So it's taken a lot of creativity over the years to find those opportunities to go over to Europe and bank racing over there and kind of find the big races that North America does have to offer. And I feel it's definitely growing over here and has grown over the years. But yeah, like the number of times I've been over to Europe only in the past 4 years has just been crazy. Like before that, I'd been over there like once. So yeah, it's definitely been a transition, but I have the travel bug. So, you know, I'm going stir crazy, man. This is too much.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I've always thought is a great thing about working in cycling, I mean, even if I end up being a journalist, like I'm training to do, I still get to do it, is that cycling is a sport where you have to travel the world. The nature of cycling means one day, the start of the season, I base this off the men's season, but the women's season follows a similar suit. The start of the season, you're in Australia, and then if you're riding on the track, you've got World Cups in Hong Kong, you've got World Cups in Canada, you've got World Cups all over the place. So you do get to travel the world as part of your job. And actually, one of the nice things about cycling is it's not like traveling for a sport like football or soccer, where you go there, you stay in a hotel, you go to the stadium and you leave. Even if you're track racing, you still get out and train on the bike in the environment. You get to see the place that you're staying. So how much do you enjoy the fact that you get to live that lifestyle?
Oh, I wouldn't trade it for any other lifestyle. I love it. Like, just the people I've been able to meet and the places I've been able to see. And yeah, lots of the races, even with track, yeah, you do get out a bit. Lots of it, you do really just see the inside of the hotel and the track, I find, because you're there for such a short amount of time. Like some of the World Cups we've flown in the day before, and like it's right away just trying to get on the time zone, because we almost always have a 9-hour time difference, 9 or 10 hour time difference. So you're just focused on getting onto the time zone, on flushing the legs out, just getting over travel, and then you fly out pretty much right after racing. So it's really just taking those moments when you're somewhere new, like if you can get out and go grab a coffee or just see something. Like I always like to just find one thing wherever I am that I want to see and make that happen. And then at least I can, when talking to people about it, I can be like, oh yeah, I was there, I saw this thing. And then, yay, hopefully go back someday and adventure more.
Yeah, I mean, I live... So the two places I live almost the exact same distance. So where I am now, I live an hour from the Olympic Velodrome in London, and where I'm at university, I live an hour from the Manchester Velodrome. So obviously I'm a bit beyond where people ride when they turn up to like spread their legs, but it's nice to see that people get to explore bits of the country that perhaps wouldn't normally be visited. And especially as a cyclist, if you go somewhere to ride, you don't tend to stick in a city. So you do get to see bits of the country that you wouldn't normally go to.
So, oh yeah, also, it's definitely a benefit.
Yeah, and like there are some nice places in the UK, believe it or not. You have to find them.
I loved the UK when I was over there. Oh, I had a great time.
So how good is it for you that Canada's had a home World Cup the last few years? Is it, because from our experience over here, and obviously how well GB have done in cycling over the last few years, the cycling craze is massive here, and every GB cyclist tells you how big of a boost it is to race in front of a home crowd here. How big is it for you in Canada? Does it make a difference? Are you swamped by people? How does it work?
So I actually haven't raced at the World Cup here the past 2 years. So based off of what I've seen, there's definitely been a lot of support from the community they bring out. And it's super cool having a World Cup over here, because like I said, all the World Cups I've been to are over across the ocean, and you have to fly and have a time difference. So just for Canadian athletes to have that home field, home track advantage, it's pretty special, because they really don't get that much.
Yeah, good journalist doing his research right there. And the other thing you do, which I think looks like a lot of fun, and I had previously had on Alex Spratt, who is a 6-day sprinter. When they have it in the UK, he tends to be the sprinter they go for. How much fun is racing 6 days? Because it looks like possibly the most fun most cyclists have on a bike.
Oh my gosh, it's like unreal. The first one I did was 2 years ago. I did the Copenhagen 6-day. That was kind of my first taste of it. And I was just like obsessed since then. I mean, I had a really bad accident and it did not end on a good note for me. But just like the atmosphere and just the crowd and the riders, like everybody's so hyped up, and you get to sleep all day and then race all night, and you're just hyped up on caffeine and like music. And I mean, Berlin was definitely the biggest one I've done, which I did this year, Berlin 6 Day. And I remember, like, it just kind of hit me in this moment where I was warming up and then under the track, and then I came up and they were setting off fireworks inside the velodrome. Just like, what is this? Like, this is unlike anything you could imagine. Like, this is so different from a World Cup. I mean, the racing, you still have points on the line, so it's like hard, serious racing, but just the electrifying crowds and the music and the lights and just the party atmosphere just brings it to this whole new level. You're like totally hyped up the whole night.
So with that, the same question I've asked a few people, in terms of how good 6 Day is, both for a TV audience and for the people in the stadium, well, not stadium, the velodrome, how do you see that as being the way cycling needs to head if it wants to keep going? Do you think velodromes will be packed out more if more events base themselves on 6 Day, or do you think the World Cup really formal kind of setup is still has a big place and it needs to stay as it is?
I think spectator-wise, 6 Days definitely seem to bring in. I mean, I've been to World Cups where the stands have been full as well. But I know for tracks, like, track racing is expensive and hosting is expensive on the city. So I definitely think 6 Days tend to bring in more money, and with the VIP and just the setup, food, all the, like, drinks, everything they have set up there. It's definitely more spectator friendly. And I mean, people come there to enjoy an evening. Like, instead of going out for dinner, let's go to the track and grab dinner there and hang out. Yeah, it's definitely more of an entertaining venue for spectators, especially those who don't know racing. I think for attracting crowds, that is the way to go. But I mean, World Cups have such a special place in the track racing community too, because that's where you really make a name for yourself, and that's where you qualify for world championships, and that's like the extremely competitive, serious side of cycling. So it's two very different styles, and it'd be really nice to see a balance of both.
Yeah, I think there's certainly a few things. Without changing the format of the racing at the World Cups, I just feel there's a few things kind of presentation-wise that could make a huge difference. So the reason I think like this is I got a free ticket to the men's decathlon at the Athletics World Championships a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't expect from that, having been to cycling World Cups in the UK, is that when the athletes come out, they come out through a big LED tunnel and there's fireworks and there's pumping music, which you don't get at a track World Cup. You get an announcer just announcing who's about to ride. And obviously, I know cycling events, particularly the kind of timed events, you need silence before the start because the start's so important. But I just feel more could be made of the riders, and you get more personalities from that. Because one thing I've always felt about cycling is that people don't tend to know all the riders when they turn up somewhere. Like, if you turn up to a football game or an athletics event, a lot of people know most of the athletes. Whereas in cycling, you get this kind of thing, particularly with 6 Day and a lot of the World Cups, where you say, well, I know, well, British fans will say, well, I know Eleanor Barker, I know Laura Trott, I know Jason Kenny, I know these mm-hmm. people. I don't know who this person is, I don't know who this person is. So would making more of it help you out as an athlete in terms of that?
Now, that's a very good point. Like, finding some kind of balance to bring a 6 Day atmosphere into the World Cup circuit would be super cool. Like, we're just watching the Michael Jordan documentary right now, or Netflix show, and like every time he comes out for a game, the stadium goes wild, like the whole team, it's the whole presentation and the whole like hype up for the game. So I think bringing some of that, I know cycling seems to have this kind of more prestigious, proper kind of vibe to it, But I definitely think it would have to be a transition and people would have to get used to it. But I think bringing some of that into the World Cups would just bring it to a whole new level of having a bigger fan base, having more hype around it. And like anything, like riders would adjust and hopefully get into it. So I definitely think you're right with that. Like that would be a good addition to the World Cups.
So the thing is, it's just like cycling seems to be the only sport to me. I don't know how much promotion it's got in America, but Tottenham Hotspur, my nearest team, the team I support, they built their new £1 billion, 60,000 seat stadium. And before a game there, it's impossible not to get like kind of your hairs all stand up on end, and it's amazing. The music's so loud, it's all dramatic, all the lights are going mental. And I just feel like cycling needs a bit more of that. And actually, I was just thinking about the stadiums. We see actually now more and more sports. I mean, ice hockey does it in America, and they have done it for a long time, the Winter Classic, where they play an ice hockey game in a big stadium. Do you think there is potential for cycling to do kind of what swimming did recently? So swimming, the International Swimming League, they held the final round in the MGM Grand. They built a swimming pool inside the bottom of the hotel, the massive arena, and it filled out. Do you think there's potential for cycling to take places like the O2 Arena in the UK or arenas in America, build velodromes, even if they're the shorter ones, like the kind of Scandinavian style ones, and move into there?
I think there's potential there. I think bottom line in America, there just aren't enough track racers. And I think there's enough track races over in Europe that lots of those riders wouldn't come over. And so I just don't think the money over here would be put into that. But I mean, that would be cool. I know tracks cost a lot to build, as I'm sure swimming pools do too. But if it could get to the place that that would happen, like, that's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, I have zero contact. So if anyone listening happens to own like a massive arena somewhere, hit me up.
Yeah, I'll have a huge arena and want to build like a track. Yeah.
That'd be sweet. One of my like 60 Bremen listeners. Doesn't the Bremen one have a, or is it one of the ones in Berlin has a swimming pool in the middle? Somewhere
Berlin has a swimming pool next to it. But when I was in Bremen this year, so they take that track apart every year and just put it together for those 6 days, which I was like mind blown. And I was asking them, like, when did you start? We were there on the weekend. Like, when did you start putting this together? Like, oh, about 5 days ago. And like 5 days, they put a track together. They painted it, like stickers on it.
This is the
build
thing.
A track in 5 days. It's crazy.
The other thing we're seeing now in other sports is the revolution in what we used to deem to be a single-use stadium is just completely changed. So talking about Tottenham Stadium, they have a full-time American football pitch, AstroTurf, underneath the football pitch that can be converted in a matter of hours. They can take away the football pitch. It slides off into the car park. The LA Raiders, as they're now called, they've now got a pitch that sits outside before the game and then goes into the pitch during the game. There's every chance that technology will advance to the point where we can be building tracks in all sorts of multi-purpose arenas. And I think there's definitely, particularly in Europe, a big, big opportunity to grow there. But we have to wait and see. The only issue
I think
is
that's the way it needs to go. Like, arenas need to bring in money, and just having a velodrome, they probably aren't going to bring in enough to support it. Or like very few tracks will be able to. So having more tracks like Bremen, even if they're shorter, like shorter velodromes are still epic. They're fun. A whole new level of terrifying track riding. But just having more of those, like having multi-use arenas, I think is the way we really need to go to be able to support all these different sports and make it feasible for countries. Like I think that's what North America probably needs to do, because hockey and soccer and football are also big. American football are also big over here. That if they had tracks they could just throw together for events, and if they were able to build them to a place where riders would come, like, I think that's the way they need to go.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing here is, particularly in the UK, and I know we're on a massive cycling craze and have been since the Olympics in 2012 and Bradley Wiggins winning the Tour de France. It just went mental. But I don't know, you probably don't know much about British domestic cycling because it doesn't really concern you. But so every year they have an event called the Tour Series, which is only open to British continental teams and the elite teams. So not the top teams in the world, and they host kind of 10 rounds in city centres, crits, and they just open them up all day. And the crowds you get for that are beyond anything anyone else who rides at that level normally sees. They're used to racing on crit circuits where just the cyclists who are waiting to race next are racing. And they come out to city centres that are absolutely packed with people who finish their day at work, and it's night racing and it's exciting. And I think everything we need to do needs to head towards making it more accessible for everyone. And cycling is the perfect sport to do that.
It is. Oh, yeah. Like up, so up particular to British Columbia, where I live, they have this crit series called BC Super Week. And they have 8 or 9 crits over 10 days of racing, or 7 crits and 2 road races. And yeah, they just close down the city centers, and their biggest one is called Gastown Grand Prix, and it's $10,000 or maybe $12,000 now to the man and woman who win. And they bring out like 20,000 plus people. And you ask people around here, like, who even just don't know anything about cycling, but they've heard of this because it's just such a landmark race, and it's been around for so long. It's such a historical race that that's the kind of thing that brings out people and bring them together. And I know crits, especially over in North America, have grown like so much in the past couple of years. And that's like where the big hard racing, and that's where the money's at right now.
Well, yeah, there's a big craze of, well, it kind of really grew mostly originally in the US, the fixed gear criteriums, Red Hook and all that, they really grew up in America. It's a very, very trendy kind of environment. Like the best fixed gear crit racer in the UK is a guy called Alec Briggs, and I think he is the coolest cyclist you'll ever see. At the moment in lockdown, every Friday, he just does a 2-3 hour DJ set just because he can. And then he rides around his bike. He has his own team called Tekka CC, and their jersey is it's a fade from purple to orange, and all the way down the sleeves, like how Adidas have their special pattern on their sleeves, it's just dinosaurs all the way down the sleeves. He's just the coolest guy I've ever met. His team car's an old school Mini Cooper. Yeah, great guy. Got Eleanor Barker riding for him
so
now.
So great.
Really nice guy as well. Yeah, so what I was thinking was earlier was that Madison actually in itself, as far as I'm aware, was really an American craze, if not an American invention. And actually, it has something to do with Madison Square Garden. And I can't remember what the relation is. Yeah, exactly. There you go. I'm not an idiot after all. So,
well done.
Where do you think cycling's gone wrong and how it's died? Do you think, I know I'm talking about the US more than Canada here, but obviously it's just easy because it's a bit more prominent. Do you think all the build up from Lance Armstrong and then the fallout from it has caused a problem, or do you think it's still the high of Lance winning Tour de France is still boosting cycling in America, or what?
I don't know if it's boosting cycling in America. I think definitely more people know about cycling because of it. But I mean, when you're over here, if you say, oh, hey, I'm a cyclist, the first thing they think about is, oh, Lance, the first thing they mention. Like, great, yeah. Just like about a million other things better than that, but you know. I think because of that, road racing was at the forefront for so long, and track racing has kind of lost momentum over here. And I mean, America and Canada are so big, and there's like in Canada right now, we have 2, soon to be 3 indoor velodromes. And like, I'm lucky enough to live 45 minutes from one, but the closest other indoor velodrome is a 5-hour flight away. So I think that's where track racing has definitely struggled. Because there just isn't the facilities. And I mean, we get harsh winters out here, so we can't ride outdoors all year. So I think partly to do with Lance, that's where road racing got a big push. And then just the lack of velodromes and support for track racing, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, and obviously on the track, this is coming to my head because I can see it behind you. You've been a world champion, and that must be such an honour. I think cycling do world championships the best of anyone. Like, I know if you win a World Cup in football, you get a medal and you get to hold the trophy. But cycling, you get a whole year. I know it's harder at junior level because you have to then race again at junior level to wear the jersey. But you get something as big as that. So how was that to win a world championship?
That was amazing. It was very special. I like the day before I'd won silver in the Omnium, and I'd been dreaming about that world championship jersey. I was so close, and I was just like pumped that I got silver, but devastated at the same time. And I went to bed that night, and I just told myself, I'm like, yeah, tomorrow in the points race, like, that's my day, I'm gonna get it. And I did, and then it was totally unreal, and I did it like the hardest way I probably could. I crashed once or twice during that race. There was like, the race was neutralized like 5 times. I took a lap, hardest lap I had ever taken, and one of the first laps I'd ever taken in a points race. Definitely almost puked all over the track. And then getting it in the end, I think you're just kind of in shock for a bit, and it takes a while for it to sink in. And then by the time it did sink in, it was like on to the next thing. I mean, I had road rolled like less than a month later. So like, this is awesome, but I mean, here we go, on to the next thing. And then, I mean, I only had 3 months and more of junior, so I unfortunately never got a chance to race another points race and wear that jersey in a race. But that's why I just need an elite title now.
Yeah, here we go. Agree.
Need to get it.
Yeah, get on it, and then, or win the Madison World Championship, so you get to wear one every 6 days you race.
Heyo.
Just putting it out there.
That's it.
Here's the most important journalistic question I've asked in my whole journalistic career.
Okay.
Did you sleep in the rainbow jersey after you won it? Because some cyclists do.
I did not. I am so particular about sleeping. Like, there needs to be no light in my room. If, like, my laptop has a little light on the side of it, it needs to be, like, put away or turned off. Sheets need to be perfect. Like, yeah, if I was going to sleep in it, there was just, I was not going to be able to sleep. And plus it kind of was like a treasure and I didn't want to rumple it. But then I did a photo shoot when I got back. The eyewear glasses I was, Rider's Eyewear wanted to do it with me. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll wear it. And it was rainy and muddy and I got mud splattered all over it. Oh man, my poor jersey. Yeah.
It looks very clean from what I can see now, so that's all right. So it's doing all right.
Thank you.
But yeah, just wait till you get your senior one, and it'll be good. It'll be good.
There you go. I just need another one, yeah.
Clean one. I've got to be
open-minded.
Got to wish one for Laura as well, because Laura, I keep trying to convince Laura to send me a European jersey, but it's the only one she got, and she didn't get one made because they don't race like domestic points races in Ireland.
She doesn't get to wear it.
So whoever wins one first, I'm expecting my wall.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's now noted on the podcast. So
thing is,
no turning back on that.
Exactly.
Basically a pinky promise.
My policy has always been, if I ask enough people, eventually it'll work out. No, to be fair, Laura's sending me, Laura, the 21-time Irish champion, which is just mental, is sending me one of her Irish champions jerseys. So that'll do. That's all right. You can move on from that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So thank you, Laura, because she actually listens to these amazingly. She's one of the few.
Hi, Laura. Nice to meet you.
Oh, well, you never know. The way you both go, you'll be racing against each other soon. So friendly faces.
Assuming we ever race bikes again. I mean, bike racing? What is that?
Yeah, you know, it's sitting on a turbo trainer and lying about your weight to go faster. But I'll keep my personal opinions about Swift. more journalistic, but that would just straight up be a lie. So what, let's talk about life, and because one thing people find, I think, with athletes is it's hard to kind of humanize an athlete sometimes if all you see them doing is riding 12 times as fast as you can on a bike round and round in circles, winning races. So you obviously said you've been watching the Michael Jordan documentary. Anything else you've been watching?
Ozark.
Don't know what that is, but I think it's on Netflix.
Been watching Ozark. Yeah, it's on money laundering. Judge me all you want. Went through a season of The Bachelor. Powered through it.
Yeah, that's easy watching TV, isn't it? It's like that Love is Blind. Mental show.
Oh, great show. Loved that one. You... Love is Blind. And then hopped onto the Too Hot to Handle train. Which I felt terrible about myself after starting to watch that. I'm like, I'm watching objectification on Netflix. This is so wrong. I mean, but those Netflix shows are just so damn addicting.
I've never, in my 19 years on this planet, seen one TV show take over the world in fantasy. Like, I've seen it where something goes crazy in the UK or something goes crazy in the US. But my word, Tiger King.
Yeah, of course, nothing goes crazy in Canada.
Tiger King, crazy. That took over the world and it's blown my mind. And I watched it, and well, I don't know if you've watched it, but it's some next level show. Well,
I haven't.
Yeah, in terms of things I'd recommend, if you didn't ask, but I'm telling you.
I feel like since seeing all the memes about it, like, I've pretty much watched it already.
It is insane to watch. It's like, what's the other one? Don't Fuck with Cats.
That one, mental as well. I love a bit of a plot twist. That, have you not heard of that one?
No.
I can't even explain it. It's just absolutely crazy. These group of people who were just in a group posting about cats end up catching a murderer. Mental. It's like Catfish on steroids.
Sounds on the edge.
Yeah, but my recommendation as a cyclist, and I think all athletes and all people who have an interest in sports should watch it, is on Netflix. They have a Netflix documentary specially called Icarus.
A few years old now. Have you watched it?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing documentary. I absolutely love it. I've watched it a few times. Just blows my mind how things happen. But yeah.
It really does.
So what else do you do in your time other than watching dating shows on Netflix?
Thanks, make my life look real great right now. Well, what else do I do with my life? So I'm studying online courses right now. I'm training as a personal trainer. I do a ton of yoga, hashtag yoga every damn day.
Can I just say before you carry on that anyone who is listening to this needs to go and look at Maggie's Instagram,
because
I don't even understand how you can make your body do some of the things you do. I've done some beginner's yoga, and I feel like a gymnast when I do that thread the needle. I think, bloody hell, look at this. So I'm all over the place here. And I look at your Instagram, and I think, you know what, actually, no, I'm pipe down.
Hey, you know, even just like standing here, put your arms over your head, and you're like, I'm a freaking yogi. Let's go. No, yeah, yoga is, like, I started doing that 5 years ago. Just, I definitely wasn't a very flexible person, and I did a lot of sports, and I figured I just needed to learn how to touch my toes. So I started at a yoga studio in town and got hooked pretty quickly, and then started doing handstands and kind of got addicted to watching the world go by the wrong way, upside down. So it's been my life. So now I'm training as a
good skill for a cyclist.
Get that done.
I think that's a good thing to have as a cyclist. I mean, I don't really like the flexibility. I mean, wanting to watch the world upside down seems like you're just inspired by, like, to crash. Bike racing might be better when you're on your head.
But hey, the flexibility and learning how to, like, roll out of a handstand, like, I'll hit the pavement and just, like, roll right out of it.
I was about to offer you something, but I don't have any money or anything worth offering. But the day if you can go over the front wheel of your bike, stay clipped in and roll it back out and carry on riding afterwards, I'll quit cycling journalism and I'll just be able to go and live happily and never have to do anything again. So maybe you should work
noted
on that.
I'm on it.
Well, we saw Olympics a few years ago when one of the Dutch riders rode up the advertising boards. No one knew that was possible. It is now. So
hey, you know, anything's possible. I'll start practicing. Thanks for the challenge.
The original cycling video that went viral was the one of Gregory Bourget, the French sprinter, when he did his little drift in the World Championships finals. I don't know if you've seen that one, where he locks his pedals out and slides across the line sideways and recovers it fine. Mental.
Crazy. That's scary stuff.
Track riding is scary. That's just full stop. It's fun. It's terrifying.
What riding?
Track riding.
Oh, track riding. I thought you said cat riding. Like, back on the cats.
I have never ridden a cat. I have two, and I will come out. It's a bit like Oprah now. I've come out, and I will openly say that I've never ridden a cat
in my life. I should hope not, because the poor cat, I think,
come to think
not
of it,
meant to be ridden.
I've never even ridden a horse. So, I'm not really one with animals. Like, I love animals, but I'm just not one with them. They just don't get on. I know you've ridden horses.
That's also what I do. When I'm home and have some downtime, I go ride horses. I have a bro. His name is Elmo.
I hope you ride him to the shops and stuff. If I had the ability to ride a horse and had a horse, I would ride it everywhere. I'd turn up at the pub on my horse. Just be like...
Oh, that was my dream when I was young in school. I just wanted to, like, ride my horse to school, tie it up outside. Everyone would be super jealous of me, like, want to go pet my horse at lunch. But, you know, we're not quite country enough out here for that.
Maybe you should listen. There was a song that went absolutely viral in Ireland 5 or 6 years ago. and basically the song just goes through a list of cars and says, like, fuck your Honda Civic, I've got a horse outside. And there we are. That's back to the dream.
That should be my new anthem.
Exactly. You know when you get to choose... Well, I know the sprinters do it, and if you get to, but if you get to choose a song for when you get introduced at 6 days, there you go. Tell them.
Yeah, that should be it. Yay, glad we had this talk.
You've never considered, when using time trial bars, kind of sculpting a horse's head in front of you onto the CD bars.
That'd be pretty good.
I'm not sure about that.
Never considered it, though.
I mean, I'm sure there's a reason there's been no testing on that, but okay. You never know.
Look good, look cool, go fast.
Everything is about aero gains, which is why I go so slowly, because I am literally a parachute as a human. So, yeah, I'm not aero at all.
That's why I need to be bendy.
Exactly. Yoga. You can just get down, pull up. You can put your handlebars next to your pedals, probably, and you'll be away. Just be all good.
Flip myself around.
Well, you'd be good at stair racing. I don't even know if they do women's stair racing, but you'd be good at it. They might have done it at 6 stage you were at, but I don't know if they do women's stair racing. It's amazing.
I don't think they do.
Stair racing captivates me nonstop. Like,
yeah,
the Derny races, okay, these are exciting, but actual motorbikes and stupid looking bikes, next level. Absolutely next level.
Yeah, they added a Berlin. They're pretty cool.
Here's the thing. Learn something new every day. Not many people know. Because for a long time, I just thought the blue line on the track was just like, if you're in a bunch, stay above the blue line. It's the stayers line. It's the fastest line you can go on the track on a stayer bike.
That's why it's...
Because I thought it's such a random line to put on the track. So if you watch stayer racing... And watch where they ride. Yeah. They all ride on the blue. And they do the same in Derny racing, to be fair.
Yeah, they do the same with that. But
learn something new every day.
Learn something new every day. Huh.
And now I know what all three lines on the track do.
Amazing.
Mate, I'm a font of knowledge. There's always a reason to come on the podcast.
It's my education for the day.
Exactly. PayPal me £10 if you didn't know that. Everyone listening. That's not gonna work. It's really not gonna work.
Sorry, I don't have pounds here.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean so far I've checked my podcast revenue. 60 American cent. So I'm pretty much rolling in it.
60 American cent. Oof.
I also can't get it out unless I have an American bank account, so it's all looking pretty stellar for me,
so
really.
So you just transferred to me. Not that I have an American bank account, but you know.
You want 60 cents? You can have the 60 cents if you want 60 cents.
Treat yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't even know after conversion, they all the company who distribute my podcast also take 25 cent every time. So it's what, 35 cent. What could I buy with like 30p? There's a little chocolate bar in the shape of a frog in the UK called a Freddo, and they're 20p, so probably one of those. And I actually, right now, I'm now in the mood for Freddo, so you never know.
I don't even know what that is, but sounds great. I'm kind of in the mood for it too.
Yeah.
Mail one over.
Next time you come, race 6 day in the UK or World Cup, you know what to go looking for. Or actually, unless it's in Glasgow, which I doubt it will be, I'll come and bring you one. I'll bring you a Freddo, I'll present you with a Freddo.
Perfect. Sounds good. I'm not here for the racing. I'm here for a
Freddo.
Freddo.
Yeah, and you can have proper Kinder eggs over here. I don't know what Canada's rules are. I know America doesn't allow them.
Yeah, I think Canada stopped allowing them too because they're a choking hazard.
We just let them choke. It's policy in the UK. No. Yeah, I never once choked on a Kinder egg. I'll be honest with you. I did warn you before we started the podcast that I end up just going on absolute tangents, and I've done it here.
Yeah, we're on Kinder eggs now. I didn't even notice.
Kinder eggs, Freddos. I'm trying to think, what other elite UK chocolates have we got? See, the thing is, I can't speak for Canada because I've never been to Canada. I've been to 6 states in the US, but I've never been to Canada. Close off comes Vermont, which is basically Canada. Vermont's basically Canada, let's be real. I could see the Canada border at one point, so I've been. But yeah, I'm trying to think because America's chocolate is just so weak. We put more percentage chocolate into our chocolate, so just a bit more flavour.
Yeah, I don't think we're known for chocolate over here. Maple syrup, though, come to Canada.
I eat a lot of maple syrup, to be fair. So
maple syrup on everything. Exactly. Pasta, bacon.
Pasta.
No, I'm kidding.
I was about to say, well, that is like next. Like when I went to Madeira, the little Portuguese island off the coast of Africa, they put banana on everything. They do banana on pizza. They do banana on fish. But the best thing I had, they did a fish drizzled in passion fruit oil, and it's the best thing I've ever eaten. And I'll never go back on that. It was absolutely incredible.
Interesting.
So you never know. You've got to try things. Exactly. Well, the thing is, because they're an island, for a long time they could only really eat fresh stuff that they could grow. So a lot of their diet is just fish, passion fruits, and bananas because that's all they could get.
That's fair.
Yeah. But maybe you should try and get 6 day to build a track in Madeira and just go visit.
So I can have banana on fish.
Exactly. Yeah. The official dish of the competition. I don't know
my 6 day racing is going to be based around the foods I want to try around the world now.
Exactly. Have you raced one in the UK?
Banana on fish, Freddo. Sorry?
Have you raced one in the UK?
I was supposed to race Manchester this year. We were over there.
I could have gone.
Cancelled it on the way to the track.
Oh, that's sad. Well,
ended up doing a 5-hour ride into the hills.
Which direction?
We went up Snake's Pass.
It means nothing to me. I can't enlighten
you. Winnet's Pass?
Ah, that's actually heading the right direction. That is near where I live. You head out into Lancashire, I'm pretty sure. Oh, actually, no,
yes,
you might. If you go that way, you go into the Peak District. If you go that way, you go to Lancashire.
We were in the Peaks, started in the Peaks, went around up Winnet's Pass. And then somehow back into Manchester.
Okay. So I just realized I said that way and that way. And this is an audio podcast. So I'm all about getting listeners involved. That way. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining me. I'll stop waffling now because if people haven't already stopped listening to me, they will soon. Thank you for joining me. It's been an honor to have someone. My first non-European guest. Very honored.
Oh, wow. I'm honored. Thank you for having me.
I believe my first world champion as well. So you never know. Series of firsts. So everyone, go and follow Maggie on Instagram. I don't know her handle, but she does, as she can tell you.
At Maggie Coleslister, my name.
Okay, there we go. Complex. And yeah, make sure you follow the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or even Anchor if you're listening on Anchor. And I will find out who I'll be back with next time.